Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network on tour. Hello, everybody in Denver that's walking by our tent on Larimer Square. My name's Kat Johnson. I'm the communications director at Heritage Radio Network. I have my colleagues Katie and Hannah here.
Hey.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. It's kind of like a little mini happy hour we have going.
It is. It's the happiest it's hour.
It's time. We have a happy hour regular with us, too.
We have... someone who might as well be part of the HRN team. The one and only Steven Satterfield.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
It's nice to be back.
You're like not really the one and only Steven Satterfield, though, because there is, in fact, another one.
There is another one. We, the other Steven Satterfield, as we refer to him at Miller Union, he is my doppelganger on social media, yet we look nothing alike.
Nothing alike.
True.
And we've become friends. We often text each other when it's each other's birthdays because we get false...
passing along your birthday wishes today.
Exactly, yeah. Or there was one time where I texted him. I said, do you have a reservation at this restaurant? Because I got your confirmation, and it's in San Francisco. I'm not going to be there.
Oh, that's so funny.
So we
If you should have stolen his reservation.
Except for I would have had to book a flight and get out there that day.
That would be...
it's a little involved.
Steven, why are you here? This is my table. I confirmed it. So one thing we are excited to talk to you about, we're going to get into all the amazing things that you have going on at the festival this weekend, but we discovered, because we wanted you to come to our gala, our annual gala, we're hoping to get you there one of these years, but... we are asking you about if you could make it, and you couldn't because you're also celebrating a 10-year anniversary.
That's right, in November.
So Miller Union will turn 10 years old.
That's right.
And it feels like Miller Union's been part of Atlanta for much longer than that, but...
I mean, tell me about it. It feels like that, too. No, it's funny. 10 years, it's like... at the same time, it's a blink of the eye, but it's also like, it feels like an eternity.
Yeah.
I always joke with my staff that my ghost is going to haunt the same 5 feet that I walk on Expo every day, asking for a runner to come and run the food. So whoever inherits that building, you know, 50 years from now, I'm going to be haunting them with that. Runner.
It'll still be Miller Union 50 years from now.
We'll see.
Well, I don't know. Who knows? What's changed in 10 years, both for the restaurant, for you, and then for Atlanta?
Wow. So Atlanta has changed dramatically in the past decade. I feel like every American city has really changed. People are flocking to cities. I mean, Denver has grown so much since I was here last year. It's mind-boggling. And the same thing is happening in Atlanta. There's just these... influx of people, a lot of young people moving to cities for new opportunities. But what I love so much about the Atlanta food scene, it's very integrated. There's so many different types of people all working together for a common goal. The growing community in Atlanta is really strong. We have a lot of new young farmers, which is super exciting to witness. Our farmers market scene has grown tremendously. The amount of chefs using seasonal local produce has quadrupled or quintupled in the past 10 years. And it's really cool to see all these different chefs using the same ingredients in different ways. So it's nice to, like, you know, everyone's got their own little spin on what they're going to do with a peach this summer or whatever. And it's really exciting to see so much enthusiasm around the local food movement.
I feel like Georgia peaches are iconic in a way, and... arguably the best way to eat them is to just eat them raw.
Yeah.
But is there a lot of pressure as a chef in Atlanta to do something new and creative every single season that peaches are available?
Well, it's funny because tomorrow in Atlanta, it's Peach Fest.
Oh.
So there's probably 50 restaurants doing a different peach dish. So there is pressure to do something different and stand out. And I obviously am not going to be there. So my chef de cuisine, Michael, is standing in and doing, and he was really excited about doing his own version of whatever peach he's going to make. So.
Do you know what he's doing?
Yeah, well, I want to know the dish.
You know, we were so busy this week crossing paths. I have to say I'm not 100% sure what he finished up with.
Whoever's
have
absolute faith.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
Whoever's in Atlanta, send us a tweet and let us know what the Miller Union peach dish ends up being.
Yeah.
We want to know.
Also, there's a company in Atlanta called Peach Dish.
I know, that's what I was going to ask next. Like, what is Peach Dish doing with the Peach Festival?
I wonder if they do. I bet they are doing something.
I hope so.
They have to be.
What a missed opportunity if they don't.
Right. While we're talking about Peach Dish, can I just throw out a little plug for, they have this like seasoned salt that, it's a fancy salt, but it tastes like barbecue potato chips. And when I brought deviled eggs to our picnic the other day, I made them with that salt.
Those were so good.
Kind of smoky.
Oh, nice.
Really delicious. And just putting in a plug for deviled eggs and for their delicious barbecue salt.
The most devilish of eggs.
They were super devilish.
That makes me think of another question. So obviously we talk a lot about new restaurants in Atlanta, new farmers markets. Our farmers markets are growing, farms that are nearby. There's a lot of amazing farms in Georgia. But what about also small producers, like food producers in Atlanta? I think about Beautiful Briny Sea.
Yeah.
Is a salt made there? Are there other small producers like that that you are particularly fond of?
Well, we have two meal kit companies based out of Atlanta. One is Peach Dish, one is Garnish and Gather. They both have a strong focus on using local ingredients. Beautiful Briny Sea is great. Big Green Egg is based in Atlanta.
It's true.
Shout out.
And, there's a lot of people doing, a lot of the people at the farmers markets have some value-added products. Mm-hmm. One of the farms that we work with, Greenola Acres, they produce about 50 different varieties of peppers, and she takes back to the farm whatever they didn't sell at market and then smokes and dries them and sells them as a value-added product. So she actually makes more money off the ones she didn't sell the first time.
Wow.
But it's a little more work that goes into it. They're shelf-stable, and she can sell them year-round, and we get a blend of like 7 or 8 different varieties and make our own smoked paprika in-house.
Wow.
And it is the most... It's the most incredible secret weapon for flavor in summertime dishes or even like in a winter stew. It's phenomenal.
Put Can that you talk on about your deviled
the,
eggs.
Yes, yeah. Seriously. Can you talk about the process of making paprika?
You take the dried peppers, crumble them up into the blender, and turn it on.
Hey.
No way.
That's it.
You're
you
a genius.
Just, you turn it, you just make sure your blender pitcher is very dry, no moisture whatsoever, and turn it on high until all that dried pepper is pulverized into a fine powder. That's what paprika is. It's dried peppers crushed into powder.
Leave seeds in?
No, we don't season with salt or anything like that.
When you're making the paprika,
oh, the seeds are in.
Yeah, you leave the seeds in.
So then we have some that are hot, some that are medium, some that are mild. Mm-hmm. So we can actually make like a hot paprika or a mild one if we want to tinker with what goes into the batch.
You just blew my mind, Steven.
Yeah. It's so good.
Can I share, while we're talking about blending dried things, can I share a tip?
Yes.
Okay. So the other day, it was my friend's birthday. We were going to the beach, and I decided I was going to be a great friend and bring cupcakes to the beach. So for my cupcakes, I went to Rose's Baking Basics because Rose is just the greatest. And I made the buttermilk cupcake recipe, which is basically her take on a yellow cake, but it is extra delicious because of buttermilk. And then I wanted to make a strawberry cream cheese frosting, and in my head I was like, how is that going to work? Because strawberries are very wet, and cream cheese is not like super permeable to like watery stuff. So I was like really thinking about, and it's going to be at the beach, and it's going to be hot. And I found a tip on the internet. Of course, I'm not going to remember the blog. I'm sorry, blogger.
Freeze-dried strawberries
from Trader Joe's. And I put them in the food processor with a lot of skepticism because I didn't think my food processor would powder them.
You made
strawberry
powder.
And I used a little
powder.
Countertop one. And I just went, bzz, and they were instantly a fine, fine, fine powder. And I dumped that into my cream cheese frosting, and it was so tart and strawberry-y.
Nice.
And like... perfect for the beach and nothing like no
and you
liquid
could like
came
shake
out.
A little over the top and make a little
yeah. I was not that fancy. I did pipe them but I didn't further garnish but
and
it was
are there
great.
Any left? Where are the cupcakes?
I'm
yeah,
sorry.
You didn't bring any.
Her birthday is on July 4th, so we definitely ate them all. We actually had that thing. This is another weird New York thing when you have leftover food at like a picnic. And you can just give it away in New York somehow. Like, people will accept your food from that's been sitting outside. I don't know if this is, like, I haven't seen this anywhere other than New York. But I've been like, hey, do you want, like, 3 deviled eggs that have been in my bag? Cool. Or, like, we had some extra cupcakes, and we just walked up and down Rockaway Beach. And we're like, you guys want a cupcake? And, like, 99% of people were like, yeah, sure. And then they were like, these are the best cupcakes ever. And I was just like, whoa, you people are like have a death wish. But also, it was really cool. And they were really, like, I'm glad that they took the cupcakes because they were really good.
Try that with Jell-O shots and see what people do.
Oh, my God. Oh no, my that's God. Nutcracker, Nutcracker, Nutcracker.
Yeah, if you have booze on the beach.
Yeah. You know about Nutcrackers in New York City?
What is that?
It's like a drink that's only sold at the beach.
Okay.
And it's like grain
like
alcohol,
Kool-Aid,
right?
And cheap grain alcohol. Yeah. And there's this like mafia sells it, they just walk up at the beach and they go Nutcracker, Nutcracker, Nutcracker.
Highly illegal. Wow. And highly delicious.
Come hang out at the beach with
delicious?
Us.
Delicious.
I mean, it's just a novelty thing.
They hurt.
Yeah.
They hurt.
They will
you.
Do. They get the job
Hence the name.
Done. Yeah.
Yes.
I have a question for you related to your anniversary. I'm curious if, like, as your menu has evolved over the past decade, are there any dishes that are so vitally Miller Union that they keep coming back or have stayed on the menu?
Yes, there's a few. Yeah.
Okay. So what are those dishes that are
quintessentially? Well, we have our farm egg baked in celery cream that's always on the dinner menu. Mm. And we sell at least one per table.
Wow.
And it's a very simple recipe. It's a farm egg cracked into a shallow bowl, rimmed bowl. And we make this cream that's infused with celery, onion, thyme, bay leaf, peppercorn. Mm-hmm. Very simple, but we just like, we basically sweat all this in a pot, add the cream, and steep that cream for 30, 40 minutes, and then strain the solids out, and it's like a very savory tasting cream with an essence of celery. That goes over the egg, 2 ounces, and it's baked for 4 minutes, finished in the broiler, and then you just drag your bread through it. It's got a runny yolk. The whites are just barely set, and we have some delicious pan au levain, European-style sourdough to go with it that's been grilled with olive oil.
Steven, you are now banned from coming on the show before
I know, I'm so hungry.
Okay, what else? Do it again. Do it again.
We always have our feta snack, which is Decimal Place Farms, a local goat creamery in Atlanta. They have farmstead cheese, so they raise the goats, and they're so cute. And then they milk on the farm, and she makes feta chev and a goat's milk cheddar. And we just crumble her feta, and we whip it with buttermilk, local buttermilk. And it's just like a feta dip. We put olive oil and black pepper on it, and we serve it with raw vegetables and crackers, and it's always on the menu. We always have some form of hummus, whether it's the Sea Island red pea or butter beans or English peas or crowders, just whatever kind of legume that we can get our hands on.
Yeah.
Do people say those dishes are life-changing? Wink, wink.
No. We're not going to change your life. We're just going to give you a good meal.
I'm still like maybe going to dispute that, but I thought your story about the greens was really great.
Simply sautéed greens.
They're simply,
not life-changing greens.
They're simply sautéed.
Which is a thing that you want often.
You do.
I want that.
Really do.
You know, at Charleston Wine and Food, at the close of the closing event, which was Sunday night, Ann Quattrano and I did a dish together, and we served braised greens with a bunch of different toppings, and it was like one of the most popular spots because everyone was so tired of eating pork belly and biscuits and pimento cheese, and it's like, here's a bowl of vegan greens. We made a smoked onion broth. So it had like the smoky flavor, but it wasn't ham. And then we had all these different toppings, cornbread croutons and hot sauce and chow chow, crispy country ham.
That sounds so good.
And it was a big hit because it was kind of like the Chipotle of green bowls. You could just put whatever toppings you wanted on there and eat it right there.
You might be onto something.
And I do appreciate you having a ham topping for a vegan green bowl just in case.
I feel like there could be a fast casual restaurant called just like your base is greens.
Ooh. Mess of greens.
Mess of greens.
That's what you
I like
call.
That.
Copyright that.
Yeah.
Right
ASAP.
Now.
Have you ever thought about doing, I know like there's a good amount of chefs who were like the fast casual concept is the dream.
I wouldn't say it's the dream. It might be the ticket.
Well, that is a better word for it.
I struggle with fast casual because I think it's hard to keep the quality as high as what I would like when you get into high volume. But there are many successful versions of different fast casual concepts. Maybe I will do Mesa Greens. That's an easy one to control.
I think you should.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about everything that you're doing while you're in Denver this year. You like us, have been to all three Slow Food Nations.
Yep.
And for the third year in a row, you're doing the Zero Waste Dinner on Sunday night to wrap everything up.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about it in Charleston. You're teasing that you're doing that again. Now that you're in town, what's materialized? What's the plan? Have you been able to get an idea of what you're working with?
Sure. Well, I can just tell you, the Zero Waste Dinner, first of all, there's tickets still available for tomorrow night. So
go to slowfoodnations.org.
Keep that on your radar. And we have, I think, about 20 different chefs that are going to be reinterpreting all the food that either was not served or was leftover prep or any kind of scraps or even overripe or extra things from the farmer's market. So I was just down in the commissary kitchen. Eric Lee is the chef who, on board, who is monitoring all the food that's coming in and out of the kitchen. And he showed me 2.5 pages worth of handwritten notes about the food that's coming in, mm-hmm. that we're rescuing and going to reimagine. And in fact, after this at 3:30, we're going to have a meeting of whoever is available to start picking who's going to do what. Like, just start grabbing ingredients, putting your name on it. And then tomorrow, all day, we'll be here from 9:30 in the morning until the event starts, just frantically cooking our butts off, trying to make something new out of old.
This sounds like Chopped or something. Like, I want to see.
It's a lot of fun, though.
I wish it was live streamed to see what you guys were like.
Well, there was a camera crew last year that shot the whole thing. So
awesome.
There may be more people around. And last year Massimo Batura came and he hung out in the kitchen. He had a busy schedule, so he wasn't really assigned to a dish, but he stopped by and said hello to everybody, and he came to the dinner, and it was a really nice, spirited event.
Yeah. And then moving back a little bit, so today, this afternoon, you have a author signing right across from where we are right now at the Tattered Cover pop-up.
Yeah, so actually at 6 o'clock I'll be at the kitchen counter with Jen Jasinski, and we're doing an Arc of Taste chef demo. I'm going to make Bene Seed Tahini. Bene Seeds is they're an heirloom sesame that grows in the southeast, so I brought some with me. And she's doing a heirloom watermelon salad. Well, I think they'll go very well together. I'm just going to serve mine with some raw vegetables. And then I'm going to be at Tattered Cover right there with signing copies of Root to Leaf. Should be a good time.
How long ago did Root to Leaf come out?
Root to Leaf came out 2015, so it's 4 years old.
Wow.
Any thoughts about writing another cookbook anytime soon?
I am currently working on a new proposal, and it's sort of an extension of the same idea of really reinterpreting, reimagining vegetables, but maybe punched up a little bit more in flavor, a little more of a global flavor palette in that book. So it's an exciting project.
Yeah. And then I also wanted to ask about an event that's already happened, so you cannot get tickets for it anymore, but you did it.
Unless you have a time machine.
Yeah, we do this a lot on HR, and I feel like we talk about events already happened, and we're like, you can't go anymore.
It's the recap.
Sorry,
we're
going
to recap it. You did a dinner with Row 7 Seed Company.
Yeah, so Row 7 Seeds is a company that Dan Barber, who is the chef at Blue Hill Stem Barns, has started, and he's working with breeders to develop fruits and vegetables that have maximum amount of flavor, and really just kind of coaxing the best growth out of these plants to make a really delicious starting point for a dish. And so they have several varieties of seeds, and I worked with their cucumber variety, which is grown actually to showcase a little bit of the bitter flavor of cucumber, which is kind of an interesting way to go. The cucumbers can sometimes give off a bit of bitterness, and so we really tried to maximize that that flavor potential by taking a half of a cucumber, brushing it with chili oil, and grilling it over wood, and then served it with a chilled salad of watermelon, raw cucumber, crispy pork belly, peanuts, and mint, and it was all tossed in a nuoc cham, which is a Vietnamese caramel fish sauce. So it was really, really delicious and a lot of fun. And then Paul Riley and Caroline Glover also did a dish, and both of them did beautiful dishes. Paul worked with the Upstate Abundance potato, which is a Row 7 seed, and Caroline worked with the Badger Flame beet.
Cool. I recently did a little story for Meet and Three, our show Meet and Three, about heirloom and heritage varieties of produce. And I recorded some interviews at the Georgia Heritage Foods Arrival that happened in March in Savannah. And Sarah Ross, who is the director of the Wormslow Institute, had this a beautiful analogy that if we don't have all these heirloom seeds available to us, it's like a chef go. Her analogy was a chef only being able to use a couple different varieties of produce is like opening a 64-pack crayon box and having three crayons in there.
That's exactly right. And I think there's a new push for biodiversity, mm-hmm. and just diversity in general. I think this is something that we're kind of really having a new awakening around, that so many crops have been monocultured for so long, and now we're starting to... that's what the arc of taste is all about, that. And that's the slow food concept of identifying species, different fruits and vegetables, and even animals that we eat that are in danger of disappearing because they kind of fell out of favor. And so it's always that one thing that people are ignoring, that the chefs are kind of looking towards the next thing that kind of disappear, that we can reconjure up. And Arc of Taste is a great example of that.
Looking back, again, another reflective question on 10 years, what have been some of the other Arc of Taste or heirloom seeds that you've discovered that you have like changed the way you cook or have added new flavor to the menu?
Well, one thing I'd want to mention about Arc of Taste is that I actually helped nominate the Belle of Georgia peach to the list, and it made it onto the list a couple of years ago.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Maybe last year. So that was exciting just to participate in that process. The Sea Island red pea, the Bene seed, we use those all the time at Miller Union. They're definitely part of our flavor profile. There are a lot of really amazing fruits and vegetables. The pawpaw is on there. It's just whatever we can get our hands on the Arc of Taste list, we always want to feature it.
It's a good guide.
Yes.
Good guide to what to cook with. Well, it's starting to thunder a little bit. Are we worried?
Nah.
No?
We're not.
This happens every day in the South. What are y'all worried about?
Used to it. Yeah, our only thing is we have these giant speakers, and we're like, we just don't want to get struck by lightning. We've covered all your events at Slow Food, right?
Yeah.
That's everything? Make sure you get tickets to the Zero Waste Dinner on Sunday. They're still available.
That's tomorrow.
Tomorrow. When did you get into town?
I got here Thursday and went straight from the airport to Annette, where I cooked the Roast Oven Dinner. And then, today I was at the Farmer's Market this morning with Alex Seidel and with the folks from Airbnb. Sarah Brito from Good Food 100 was there.
What's up, Sarah? She just walked by.
And also the market manager at the Union Station Farmer's Market. And it was wonderful. We had a chance to walk around and talk to some of the purveyors and taste some things. And then we went inside and we had a beautiful plate of stone fruit from the market and some first of the season heirloom tomatoes and some cucumbers and radishes and sheep's milk cheese. And we just had like a little market feast and some coffee and pastries and a really, really delightful conversation about changing the food system.
I love that. So
we're all going to do it. We're all committed.
We're doing it. So you did like an Airbnb experience.
That's right.
And so did you enjoy doing that? Do you think you might do that in Atlanta?
I think it was a really, it's a really great thing that they're focusing on to bring people into the conversation about food and the food system. I think it's wonderful to see that their engagement in that. And they're one of the supporters of Slow Food Nations this year, which is really cool. Yeah. It's great.
It's awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
I'm so glad to see like non-food companies being savvy and like they're adjacent already, but just getting involved and really like putting their money where their mouth is. It's awesome.
Well, think about it too. When you stay in an Airbnb, there's no restaurant necessarily attached like a hotel.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to go out and get something, provisions for your place. And what better place to go than the market, the farmer's market?
I love that.
Maybe. I always, when I travel in other cities, I always make a point to visit the local farmer's market and get a sense of the community and what's in season. It's such a cool thing to do if you can find one that fits into your trip and your schedule. Usually Saturday morning is a good place to start.
Perfect.
So if you're gone for the weekend and you're traveling somewhere, stop by the local farmer's market in whatever city you're in. And you might even make some new friends.
Yeah.
Ask them where you should be eating.
Smart.
Because the farmers are selling to the places that you want to go eat.
They know where the good stuff is.
Yeah.
That is a hot travel tip.
Hot travel tips.
Hell yeah.
I feel like we're learning a lot. Like, we've already developed our fast casual concept.
We know how to make paprika.
We know how to make paprika. Now we're going to have to, like, start, like, a travel journal with Steven.
And I learned how to make strawberry powder.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be thoroughly complicated.
Which sounds like, it sounds like it's a healthy fun dip. Remember, like, fun dip powder?
Yeah. The blog that I saw was, like, this is a great way to make DIY pixie sticks.
There you go.
Crazy. And I did straight up eat a lot of the strawberry powder. Yeah.
We should say this freeze-dried anything makes me think that today is the anniversary of the Apollo landing.
That's right. Freeze-dried astronaut food.
Let's do it. Yeah.
We have been thinking a lot about that topic lately, Steven.
Yes.
thinking
about new ways to make things, I saw Paul Riley at the Row 7 dinner did the coolest idea. He took the Upstate Abundance potatoes, very finely diced them. So they were like a 16th inch dice, okay? And then he put them in a pan with extra virgin olive oil and salt and was stirring them around, added white wine, a little bit of water, Parmesan cheese, onions, garlic, and he basically made a potato risotto. By stirring the potato and the fat and the wine,
Whoa.
It releases the starch and then it had the texture of risotto. It was amazing.
Does it puff up at all, or it just gets like really soft?
Well, the potatoes had a tiny bit of bite to them, but they had released all their starch, so it was like eating like the potato version of arborea rice.
It's like they must lose all their corners when you're cooking them, so
exactly.
It's not like dice anymore.
That's right.
Just got that little nugget.
They rounded off a bit. Yeah.
Steven, you're making
blown.
Me so
My mind was
hungry.
Blown, and he put... ratatouille over the top, and then sheep's milk feta and a bunch of herbs, and it was fantastic.
Wow.
And he called it nightshade on nightshade on nightshade.
Nice.
Take that, Tom Brady.
That's right. Sorry, Giselle.
That just reaffirms it. I have felt this every year that I'm really missing out by not going to Bistro Model. That is high on my list.
And he has Caperto, too. Caperto. That's his new place. And he has a new pizza place.
Pizza?
Pizza?
No.
We know a thing or two about pizza. When is the last time that you've been at our studio in Brooklyn?
Oh, I was there for
opening soon.
When Tillett did the opening soon, yeah. So we were there. I cooked at the James Beard House on June 10th. It was actually 8 years. It was almost to the day.
Of
the time that I cooked there before where the Lee brothers were there.
Inspired the Lee brothers' new book. Hotbox. That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, it is.
If you haven't read Hotbox yet, think Kitchen Confidential of catering, catering world.
The dark underbelly.
It's
good. And Steven is like, basically put that all
into
motion.
We were the catalyst for that. But we went to Roberta's with everybody that cooked the night before. So it was Long Oven from Richmond, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And we had Coquette from New Orleans and Tail Up Goat from D.C., and Miller Union, the four of us, each one of us did a course. Mm-hmm. It was such a fun dinner. And the next day we all went to Roberta's.
Yay.
We had all the things, all the vegetables, all the salads, all the pizza. And then we had a great interview with Tillett for Opening Soon. It was so good.
So
it was all about team and culture.
Opening Soon is our new show about opening a restaurant. And Tillett is a chefware company. Jenny and Alex at one point had a restaurant. Alex is a chef. Like it happens with many restaurants, it closed. But
pretty quickly, as they will tell you.
And New York's tough, you know, but they now have this really successful company and obviously work very closely with a lot of chefs. So this show is all about how to open your own restaurant. So the topic that your episode focused on was...
Team and culture. And really just like growing a good culture around your brand and taking good care of your employees and keeping people there, keeping them on staff.
That's a very uplifting
Perks.
Thing to talk about, and the weather is like getting very
it's,
dark and
got,
gloomy.
Yeah. We had an even more ominous roll of thunder, so it's probably getting to be about time for us to seek shelter.
And scene.
Steven, thank you
also,
so much.
Also, Steven, you have made me so hungry.
So hungry.
I have to go eat. And I hope that everybody who has not already gotten their tickets for the Zero Waste Dinner, you better get on it. It's going to be incredible, and you'll get to eat this man's amazing food.
And here comes the rain.
And here it is.
So come back, if you can, for Steven's book signing in a few hours. Thank you, Stephen Satterfield, for sitting down with us, as always.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for being on.
Yeah.
I'm Kat. We have Katie, Hannah, signing off. Thanks again to Big Green Egg, Hearst Ranch, the Julia Child Foundation, and Slow Food USA for having us at Slow Food Nations. We'll be back hopefully after the rain passes.
And if we don't get swept away. Our amazing engineer, Jeep Paul, for setting us up and keeping us safe here and covered under this tent.